Chapter 6, Getting Started Investing in Real Estate. It's tangible, it's solid, it's beautiful. It's artistic from my standpoint, and I just love real estate. Donald Trump. That wasn't painful now, was it? After going through chapters 3 through 5 to identify national and local factors that could affect the real estate market, you probably know more about identifying and understanding real estate cycles than many full-time investors. If someone had given me this information 20 years ago, I might have avoided major mistakes and made a lot more money. In all my years of real estate investing, I've been lucky enough to lose money on only one or two real estate deals. But until I learned about real estate cycles, I often bought and sold at the wrong time. With the information in this book and the additional support you can get by going to www.deangraziosi.com, I have no doubt you can become wealthy investing in real estate. To succeed in life, use a contrarian's approach. Think differently and do things that other people don't do. From an early age, I learned to not follow the crowd. I worked hard when most kids were messing around. I got up early when others were sleeping in. I started investing in real estate long before it was cool or trendy. So much of what I teach is not the latest sexy glitz you see splashed across the internet, but these tried and true methods and techniques have worked for me and thousands of my students. So, in keeping with the contrarian's theory, I try not to follow the crowd in real estate investing either. I try to make my money before I sign a contract to buy a property. Now, you may be asking, how does anyone make money before they buy property? It's easy. Make sure you get to know as much as you can before you commit your time and money to any investment. Think of this preparation as an insurance policy for your financial future. To make money before investing, I analyze a property's pros and cons. Most importantly, I analyze how I'm going to make my money on the property before I buy it. I want to clearly identify when I will sell the property and what I need to do to the property before I can sell it. Furthermore, I like to have a backup in case my original plan doesn't work the way I intended. With more expensive properties, I create a backup to my backup for the worst-case scenario. Generally, if you do your homework and don't necessarily follow the crowd, you will achieve more success in real estate investing than you ever thought possible. The basic steps of buying and selling real estate. For most people, the only time they buy or sell real estate is when they move to a new house, which happens so rarely that each time it happens, the entire experience can seem like they're going through it for the first time. Basically, there are three steps to buying real estate. First, you need to find property to buy. Second, you need to negotiate a price with the seller. Third, you need to find the cash to pay the seller so you can legally take over the property. To sell real estate, you follow similar steps. First, you put your property on the market to make it available to your buyers. Second, you negotiate with a buyer for the price you want. Third, you wait for the buyer to give you the money. Fairly simple, right? When you think about it, buying and selling real estate is really no different than buying and selling anything. The main differences are the details, and that's where buying and selling real estate can seem confusing. However, if you understand the basic idea of buying and selling anything, you already know most of what you need to buy and sell real estate. Finding property to buy. Most people buy real estate by talking to a real estate agent, who then shows you different properties based on what you want to pay and the areas you want to buy. There's nothing wrong with buying real estate through an agent, but don't forget that you can find property to buy in many other ways as well, each with its own advantages and disadvantages. For example, when you buy property through a real estate agent, he or she takes a commission that can range from 6% to 10%, depending on the property and the agent. In return for the commission, the agent can give you advice on good and bad things to look for in property, which might not be readily obvious if you know nothing about real estate. Buying real estate through an agent is often the simplest and most convenient route for people who want help in buying property. Even if you're an experienced real estate investor, you might still want to buy property through an agent just because the agent spends his or her time constantly monitoring the real estate market. A real estate agent can tell you the trends of a given area and let you know how long homes have been on the market and whether prices seem to be climbing or falling. A competent, trusted real estate agent can be a valuable ally no matter how much experience you might have in real estate. I still use agents on a lot of my deals. But one thing to remember is that agents are paid on commission and have a financial interest in getting you to buy or sell. You don't have to use an agent. You can just as easily search for property to buy by reading the classified ads in your local newspaper, or drive around and find for sale signs planted in front yards. Your friends or relatives might even know of someone who's selling. All these methods can take time, but they give you the advantage of finding property that real estate agents may not even know about. If you can find property before anyone else hears about it, you can buy it before anyone else can, thereby avoiding a possible bidding war. Here's another way you can buy property. Ask. Just because you don't see a for sale sign on the front lawn or an advertisement in the newspaper, that doesn't mean you can't buy that property. Go to the website or office of your town or city's tax assessor, and you can find the name, address, and phone number of the property's owner. Then contact the owner directly and politely ask whether the property is for sale. This approach is most successful when looking at distressed properties, such as an abandoned home, because the property might be a liability to the owner, who would be only too glad to get rid of it. Remember, it never hurts to ask. This is just a teaser of the techniques on finding and buying properties that you will learn about in Part 3. Analyzing the property. A successful man continues to look for work after he has found a job. Unknown. Analyzing property means getting as much information as possible to help you decide whether this is the right property for you. Some important aspects of a thorough property analysis follow. Location. Look at the curb appeal, access, surrounding area, and future potential. Is the property location an asset or a liability? Make sure that the type of property fits the real estate cycle you are in. Condition. Consider eye appeal, needed repairs, and functionality. How much will it cost to bring the property up to your standards? Value. Consider the asking price, your offer price, the potential for future appreciation. Are you paying market price or below market price? This can be determined by having your title company run a sales comparison of similar properties that have recently sold in the area. Remember that in some cases, full price can be your friend. Amenities. What comes with the property that adds value? Appliances, a water conditioner, a newer air conditioning unit, a new roof, landscaping, a security system, leased or owned. Income potential. Is the property currently leased at below or above market rates? And what improvements will be necessary to maximize income potential? Functional obsolescence. How is the property laid out? Does it work for your intended purposes? And would a prospective tenant or purchaser like what they see? Extras. Does anything else come as part of the purchase price, such as additional lots? Always keep your mind open to thinking a little differently. You may be purchasing a single-family home, but the property may be large enough or laid out in a way that will allow you to subdivide another buildable lot or two that could put big cash in your pocket. Existing financing. Is the mortgage assumable? Assumable basically means that the lien holder will allow the loan to be transferred to a new owner. If not, what are your chances of working with the current lender to restructure the debt in your name or of securing a new first mortgage? New financing. Know all the available options for financing and purchasing the property. Liens and encumbrances. What liabilities come along with this property in the form of unpaid taxes, special assessments, or other liens? Your title agent will deliver that information in the title report after you have a contract on the property. Read this document carefully. Better yet, if you have a real estate agent or mortgage broker working with you, have them review the report and outline any areas of concern. Environmental issues. Is the property located close to power lines, a waste disposal facility, traffic noise, or a previous landfill? Does it have any other issues that would detract from its future sales price and the price you are offering? Has the property been tested for radon gas, formaldehyde, and lead paint? Negotiating a price to pay. Real estate prices aren't fixed. You can always negotiate a price, but just asking for a lower price is rarely going to work unless you can either justify a reason for your lower price or offer the seller something in return for the lower price. For example, If you know that a home's chimney is damaged or the wiring needs to be replaced, you can offer a lower price and use these conditions to justify your reason. The seller might not agree with your price, but at least he or she can see that you have a reason for asking for a lower price. If you just ask for a lower price without giving a reason why, it tends to insult the seller and makes it harder to close the deal, no matter how much you may really want the property. If you can't find any faults with the property, try offering the seller a lower price plus something else besides money. For example, suppose the property has cars in the backyard that must be hauled to the junkyard. Offer the seller a lower price for the property, but say you'll take care of the junk in the backyard. This saves the seller the hassle and cost of doing this himself, which can justify your lower asking price. Negotiating a price is the time to get creative. I once bought a house that several other people also wanted to buy, but the seller refused to budge from her asking price, which was about $10,000 more than it was really worth. I knew she would never lower her price, so I got creative and offered her the full asking price. Of course, giving her full price made her happy. So I also asked her to do something to make me happy. Rather than accept full payment up front, I offered to pay her full price within 2 years at no interest, just monthly payments that came directly off the purchase amount. She would get her full asking price, and I would get the property with no money down and no interest fees. She agreed, and I bought her home. So you see, when negotiating a price, find out what the seller really wants, identify what you're willing to give, and negotiate your price from there. Too many people just offer a price without explaining their reason why. So, given a choice between selling to those people or to you, which would you rather do? The oldest adage in real estate investing is that if one person sets the price and the other person sets the terms, you can always come to an agreement for sale. It all comes down to benefits. Who gets what benefit? When do they get it? And what is it going to cost them to receive it? This simple benefits philosophy has been the basis for negotiating and creative financing for ages, and I have used it often in my real estate purchases. Every property is different, and each seller and each seller's motivation for disposing of an asset or liability, as the case may be, is different as well. An essential part of making a property deal work for both you and the seller is the financing involved. The only way to know the right financing approach is to fully understand the who, what, when, where, why, and how much of the property in question. Then you can decide just how creative you need to be in your negotiations and financing proposal to the seller. In chapters 13 through 15, you will learn a variety of financing techniques you can mix and match to make your deals become a reality. Just remember that information is the key to your success. The more you have, the more likely it is that you will succeed in any situation. Getting the money to pay the price. Here comes the part that seems tricky to many people. After you find a property to buy and negotiate a fair price, you need to come up with the money to buy that property. Unless you happen to have hundreds of thousands of dollars spilling out of your bank account, you'll probably have to buy real estate using a loan. Typically, you go to a bank and ask for a loan. The bank determines how much money they think you can safely borrow, and then they give you that money. You take that money, give it all to the seller, and the seller walks away with all the cash, and you walk away with the property. Naturally, banks don't make a profit by lending money unless they also collect interest. The simplest loan is a fixed-rate loan. The bank loans you money, and you have a fixed amount of time, typically 30 or 15 years, to pay back the loan at a fixed rate of interest. A fixed-rate 30-year loan with a 20% down payment is what most people think you need to use when buying real estate. But in chapters 13 to 15, you will learn that you can purchase property in many ways, such as private lenders, seller financing, and lease options. Although I've simplified the steps involved in buying real estate, the basic ideas remain the same. Find property, negotiate a price, and pay for it. Selling property. Selling real estate is basically as simple as buying. First, you put your property on the market. This can be as simple as pounding a for sale sign in your front yard, or it can include listing your property with the real estate agent. The purpose of putting your property on the market is to attract buyers. When you sell your property can determine how much you can get for it and how long you may have to wait until someone buys it. In an up cycle, prices can rise every day, And you might even have a bidding war, with two or more people increasing their offers to buy your property. If you sell during a down cycle, you may need to leave your property on the market for a long time. Even then, you may get much less than you want. In a down cycle, it's generally best to hold on to property, rent it, and wait for an up cycle before trying to sell. As the property owner, you can determine the selling price. If nobody meets your price, you can hold on to the property. Many people sell property without waiting for the optimum time because they have to move, such as a job relocation. Or they want to cash out now and not wait. As long as you don't need the money and you don't need to get rid of the property, it's best to hold on until you get the price you want. When you sell property, the buyer basically writes you a check. This money is usually the bank's money that the bank loaned to the buyer. Real estate people you may need. Although it's possible to buy and sell property yourself, even experienced real estate investors won't necessarily do that. Instead, most people use the services of one or more professionals who can give them advice and help them through the process of closing a real estate transaction. Banker or mortgage broker. Probably the most important person you will need is a banker or mortgage broker. A banker is a loan officer for a single bank. A mortgage broker has access to a multitude of banks. For simplicity, I'll use the term banker for both bankers and mortgage brokers. A banker's job is to loan money to people whom the bank believes will pay back their loans on time. A good relationship with a banker can give you the confidence to enter into real estate transactions. After you establish a record of borrowing and paying back loans on a regular basis, your banker can speed the process in the future and even loan you more money than the bank might normally do. This can come in especially handy when you spot a great opportunity that you need to act on right away. The longer you work with the same banker, the better the banker will understand your needs and goals. A great relationship with a banker can make real estate investing so much easier. Real estate agent. A real estate agent can help you find or market property and guide you through the process of buying and selling real estate. Because real estate agents often specialize in certain areas, they can often tell you average housing prices and how long homes have been on the market before selling. Although not as crucial as your relationship with a banker, a relationship with a real estate agent can prove invaluable. After an agent knows the types of properties that you buy and sell, he or she can call you the moment a property becomes available that you might be interested in. By doing this, the agent can help you find bargains and give you a chance to buy the property before anyone else can. I still buy and sell property in the little town where I grew up, and I have used the same agent for almost 20 years. She is always in my corner and looking for the next best deal. Attorney. Let's face it, when you purchase real estate, in most cases, you will need a good attorney. In many states, one is not required, and you can use a title company. But if there are any unique circumstances, or you do not feel totally comfortable, get an attorney you can trust. Most people who buy and sell real estate infrequently may not need an attorney. But if you buy and sell many properties, including rental properties, an attorney can protect you from possible problems, as well as help you draw up agreements to use when you buy and sell properties. Handyman or general contractor. If you plan on using a fix and flip strategy, especially with properties that need minor or even major remodeling, often called handyman specials, you will want a trustworthy handyman or general contractor who can assist you and give you honest estimates before you purchase a property. The fix and flip strategy basically means buying a house, fixing and improving it, and then selling it for a profit. Real life story. Knowing the right handyman or general contractor can help you make money in real estate, as one of my students learned. Susanna works as a school teacher in Denver. After studying different types of investment strategies, she was particularly excited about the fix and flip strategy, but she didn't know how to do repairs herself, and being a school teacher, didn't have the time to learn. By asking around and checking references, she found a great general contractor who could help her every step of the way. When she found a house that she thought was perfect, she brought in her general contractor, and he gave her an exact price to get the house in the shape she wanted. After adding the purchase price, closing costs, holding costs, a few months' payments while it sold, and the contractor's price for the repairs, she realized she would still make a good profit. So, Susanna used her own financing techniques to purchase the home and let the contractor go to work. All she did was stop by a few times to check on the repairs and improvements. This contractor handled everything for her and got the place ready for resale. As soon as the house was finished, Susanna put it on the market and sold it within a few months. At the closing, she paid off the loan, paid herself back the money she spent on the contractor, and walked away with more than $20,000 profit on her first real estate investment. She could not stop bragging about her contractor, which just goes to show how priceless the right people in your network can be. Susanna is now investing in her second property and planning on a profit of about $50,000 using the same strategy and contractor. Like I said before, you don't absolutely need any or all of these people, but their services can be worth paying for so you can concentrate on buying and selling property without worrying about the legal or technical details. Understanding the stages in the real estate market. Now that you have a rough understanding of how buying and selling real estate works and the types of people you may need, let's review the four major markets. There is a fifth one as well, but it's rare, so you can pinpoint where your local real estate market may be. A real estate cycle has four stages. Think of a cycle as a roller coaster ride. In the beginning, there's the slow tick on the tracks as you gradually climb upwards. This is the time when most people get so excited that they think the climb will never end. Then you reach the top. This is when you stop going up, but you haven't started to go down yet. It's as if you're hanging in midair for a split second and nothing seems to have changed. Unfortunately, this is the time when most people don't see the new direction of the market. Suddenly, you start going down. The higher you are, the faster you can go down. This is the time when people scream and panic while others throw their hands in the air and enjoy the ride down. In real estate, the people who didn't see the inevitable downward cycle are the ones screaming and panicking. The people who saw the downward cycle and planned for it are the ones throwing their hands in the air and enjoying the ride. Finally, the roller coaster levels off and you think, whew! Just when your head stops spinning, you start going back up again. What makes the real estate roller coaster especially exciting is that you can make money anytime, going up, going down, at the top, or at the bottom. Where people run into problems investing in real estate is when they find one strategy that works and then keep trying to use that same strategy no matter how conditions around them may change. Let's do a quick review of the different real estate cycles. Up cycle. In an up cycle, demand for homes is higher than the supply, which increases property values. To tell whether the real estate market is in an up cycle, check how fast or slow properties are selling. In a hot market, homes often sell the same day they're listed. Before investing in an area, pay close attention to how long it took for the latest property to sell. Also, try to find out how many offers each property received before selling. A bidding war on a property can drive the price up very quickly. Although talking to real estate agents and brokers should give you a good idea if the market is in an up cycle, keep in mind that their commission-based pay structure leaves them little incentive to openly admit when the market is down. Check the real estate section of your local newspaper for articles that indicate whether or not the market is hot. In an up cycle, a great strategy is fixing and flipping, buying a house, fixing it up, and then selling it later for a greater profit as prices continue to climb. Top cycle. At the top or peak, supply is close or equal to demand, and prices start stabilizing. Because cycles change direction slowly, and there can be many small fluctuations within a cycle in any given real estate market, the actual peak isn't always obvious until after it's already passed. When properties start taking longer to sell, that could indicate a peak market. Unless the seller is asking for an unreasonable amount and is in no hurry to sell, longer periods of time between the listing date and the sale date may indicate that the pool of buyers has dwindled. Typically, the longer a property is on the market, the more likely the seller will accept a lower bid. After properties start selling at lower prices, the downward trend can snowball, because the final sales prices on those properties will then be the comparisons, comps, in that area for other real estate. The peak can be a great place to find motivated or desperate sellers and get a great deal on property. There is typically an excess of new construction, of investment properties for sale with investors looking for the one last buyer, and of rental properties due both to overbuilding and an increased number of residential properties purchased by investors as rentals. This oversupply brings about the market downturn, and not only the drop in property prices, but also the drop in rents to compete for the available renters. Down cycle. During a down cycle, supply is far greater than demand. Prices can fall fairly quickly, but history has shown that in most cases, prices just stop increasing or fall slightly and stick. After buyers realize that real estate prices are dropping, they are less likely to want to buy out of fear that they will lose value. As a result, properties stay on the market even longer. A down cycle can last for years until the national and local factors described in chapters 3 through 5 change and cause the cycle to go back up. At the start of the down cycle, there is a fire sale of unsold new construction units. Developers can't afford to let the property sit, so they start cutting prices. Just like retail stores, developers make their profit from all the properties they were able to sell at full price during the boom. The ones that go on the clearance rack after demand has been met are already calculated into the bottom line as an expense. Keep in mind that these are not foreclosures or fixer-uppers. They are new homes sold at extreme discounts. Bottom and prolonged bottom. At the bottom of the cycle, supply is once again much closer to demand. Prices stabilize and buyers start to come back into the market, starting the cycle all over again. In a normal bottom market, prices have fallen as far as they can, but eventually start to rise again within a few years. In rare cases, a bottom market can stay in a prolonged bottom for many years, even decades. This is the rare but possible fifth cycle that happens most often in towns or small cities that rely on a single source for employment, such as a factory. Many cities in the country's Rust Belt region, which depended on the steel or automobile industries, have been in a prolonged bottom market for decades. I visited Buffalo, New York for the past 20 years and have yet to see any signs of growth. Even in such a prolonged bottom market, however, it's still possible to make money with the right strategy. One of my students is looking into buying houses in Buffalo because he can get them so cheap with no money down and still make money by renting them out for positive cash flow. Then, when Buffalo's real estate market starts to rise again, he'll be able to sell his properties for a profit or continue holding them for the monthly rental income. Strategizing with different types of property investments. From what you've learned about real estate cycles so far, it would seem obvious that you need to use different strategies during each cycle. So why don't more people do this? Unfortunately, many so-called real estate experts have convinced inexperienced investors that the only way to make money in real estate is to buy and hold properties for the long term. The prevailing theory is that if you purchase, say, 10 properties and hold them long until the mortgages are paid off, you will receive monthly rental income from several million dollars worth of property owned free and clear. Many people have lost a lot of money trying to follow this formula because they weren't also told about the dynamics of cycle fluctuations. I'm not saying this strategy won't work. I'm saying it won't work all the time. And this is where people miss tremendous opportunities because they were either too busy losing money or thinking they had to wait 20 or 30 years to cash out and make a profit. Basically, you just have to know the proper cycle and use the right strategy. For example, back in 2004, I remember the newspapers were all warning that the real estate bubble was about to burst. Yet, between 2004 and 2006, many places around the country had gains from 20% to 100%. Besides being aware of real estate cycles, you should have an exit strategy for every property you buy. By defining an exit strategy beforehand, you won't run the risk of falling in love with a piece of property and then kicking yourself for holding on too long and losing the maximum amount of profit. Although every property you buy will be different, there are basically three types: the keeper, the temporary hold, and the flip. Property type 1, the keeper. The keeper property is found in nice neighborhoods that are unlikely to suffer from any decline. Because of their location in a more affluent upscale area, these types of properties are fairly easy to rent. With keeper properties, you should buy and hold for the long term with the goal of having the mortgage paid in full from the rental income you collect every month. In a worst-case scenario in which the rent barely covers your mortgage without leaving any extra for positive cash flow, keeper properties will continue to appreciate in value. Property type 2, the temporary hold. A temporary hold property is typically priced in the low to middle range, experiences large increases in a boom or up cycle, and is usually easy to both rent and sell. Generally, temporary hold properties are bought during a down or bottom market and held on to long enough to sell during an up cycle. To cover your mortgage payments, a temporary hold property can generate rental income as well, but the real money comes when you sell the property. Property type 3, the flip. A flip property is anything you buy just to sell it right away. Usually you can find flip properties through foreclosures, tax sales, discounted new constructions, or desperate homeowners. The idea is that you buy the property, hold it for a short period of time, usually to fix it up, and then sell or flip it. Although most people associate flip properties with an up cycle, you can buy a flip property at any cycle and make a profit if you buy it right, finance it right, and sell it right. The key is to be selective and to avoid being influenced by the greed of the boom and the fear of the bust. A good deal is a good deal, regardless of the market cycle or anyone's advice. A flip property is the fastest way to make a profit and put money in the bank. In a hot up cycle, you can make enormous profits in months and sometimes even weeks. Holding property long term. You should look at up and down cycles as seasons. You store what you've harvested in the summer so you can survive during the scarcity of winter. Similarly, you should sell temporary hold and flip properties, property types 2 and 3, at the peak of an up cycle. This will maximize your profits and give you cash to hold your keeper properties, property type 1, during the down cycle. Plus, you can take advantage of the abundance of opportunities available during a down cycle without putting yourself at too much risk. If you want to hold property for the long term, focus on keeper, type 1 properties. If you're primarily interested in flipping properties, or if you've listened to warnings that all properties should be sold at the peak, you may wonder why not just sell keeper properties at the peak and use the profits during the down cycle. I did this in the beginning of my real estate career. I would sell any property I had when the real estate market was close to its peak, pulling out what I thought was a great profit. But in hindsight, this usually wasn't a smart decision. Why? The reason is that future peaks can be expected to be even higher than the current peak, no matter how ridiculous the current peak may seem now. So if you purchased a keeper property for $100,000 12 months ago, and it rises to $150,000 at the current peak, it may rise to $250,000 in the next peak, and $500,000 in the one after that. If your renters are paying your expenses while you're holding, you've made $400,000 from your initial investment. That's the way to build your future. Because of this potential, it's critical that you finance keeper type 1 properties correctly. The first mortgage should be at a fixed rate. Any second mortgages should be used for improvements to make the property more attractive to renters. Holding property short term. You should purchase temporary hold type 2 properties toward the end of the down cycle, the bottom, and the beginning of the up cycle, when prices are at their lowest and competition is lean. Because the next peak will likely occur in a few years, you would finance these properties with ARMs or interest-only loans to keep payments low while rents are still likely to be depressed. Your goal with these properties is to buy low, hold, and then sell high. This type of property can generate profits at different times and help support any long-term hold properties that you own and rent. Best of all, profits from these gains will also give you the ability to capitalize on fast flip opportunities that abound during the down cycle without borrowing against your keeper type 1 properties. Flip type 3 properties can be found in all cycles at varying discounts, amounts, and forms. The middle to the end of the up cycle sees a large amount of new construction and a frenzied market of buyers. Some speculators buy new construction properties at the planning stage and sell them after they're built. Because there are no mortgage payments during the building phase, and the first payment isn't usually due until the second month after closing, you can enjoy the gains from the overall increases in property prices during the building phase with your down payment as the only outlay. Real life story. One of my students used this fix and flip strategy in Florida during the 2004 housing boom to do his first deal. He had no money to invest, yet he saw the potential of locking up a new home, not paying any interest or payments on it while it was built, and selling it once it was finished. So he visited many new developments in his area until he found one that he knew was in a location that was about to expand and that would allow him to sell the property within 1 year. During an upcycle, many developers stipulate that you have to hold a new home for 1 year. This deters some investors. He found the perfect development and started his negotiations to get a house built for a $5,000 deposit. Now he needed the money. He put together a small breakdown of risks versus rewards, which showed the possibilities of how much money could be made with a $5,000 deposit that would be held up for about 6 months while the house was built. Then he went around to everyone he knew, and even some strangers, to see whether someone would put up the $5,000. He found a friend of a friend who had her money in the bank, getting minimal interest, and she took him up on his offer. They put the $5,000 deposit on the house and signed the contract. His timing and thoughts for the expansion of the neighborhood were right on. When the house was completed, they immediately sold it for a $60,000 profit. My student got to make $30,000 without using any of his own money, just by doing his homework. And the woman who invested in the property got to make $25,000, her $30,000 profit, minus the $5,000 of her initial investment. A true win-win for everyone involved. But remember, homework and cycle analysis are the keys to this type of profit. Without truly analyzing the cycle and the time it has been in an upswing, this could be risky. If you buy too early, buyers can still buy from the developer. And if you buy too late, your house might end up with those on the clearance rack. Nonetheless, in an environment with double-digit annual price increases, even the six-month or so building period can see a tremendous increase from the original purchase price. A bubble market has a small window of opportunity when it is a great time to make a lot of money fast. Buying a temporary hold type 2 property can be great when there's an excess of new construction, usually following a real estate peak. If you buy early enough during an up cycle, you can often buy a home before it's constructed, hold as the price increases, and then sell at a huge profit as my student did in the preceding example. Then, as the market peaks and starts to drop, you can use your profit to buy additional properties. This is being cycle smart. When the market falls into a down cycle, many people pull their money out of the market. But if you think a little differently, you can see how a down cycle can be the best time to put your money into the market. Not only do property values fall during a down cycle, but the number of available distressed properties, foreclosures, tax sales, and bank-owned properties increases, which means you can pick up properties at bargain basement prices. Even better, a down cycle has fewer buyers, so you have less competition, which means sellers are more likely to make even better deals with you. During this time, you can often find homes in better condition needing fewer repairs due to friendly foreclosures, where the homeowner just wants out of the burden of paying for overpriced property rather than being forced out after a long period of economic distress, which typically causes neglect. A down cycle is the time to buy a home in top condition at an extremely discounted price, but only if you're prepared and ready for it, which, after reading this book, you will be. Trust your own analysis. Because a bubble is nothing more than the end of an up cycle, and a burst is really the beginning of a down cycle, let's recap strategies for all the stages of the real estate cycle. That way, these terms should never discourage or scare you again. No matter what type of real estate you invest in, or what cycle you are in, you can decide the best time to buy and sell to ensure that you maximize your profits. That's why I've spent so much time talking about understanding real estate cycles before investing. Keep in mind that different markets, whether they are local or national, can be in different stages of a cycle at the same time. You can shift your strategies as you feel a shift in the stages of the real estate cycle. The main point is that a person needs to use sound judgment when evaluating places to invest. I often play a game with myself where I pretend I have an investor or partner who cares only about making money. So I need to support my projections of rental income and expenses, remodeling costs, and holding costs, as well as my assumptions about interest rates, the economic demographic of the type of tenant who would rent the property, the local economic climate, and trends in the local market. To top it off, I have to outline the worst-case scenario. A great place to research job growth in a particular area of the country is through an area's city and county government offices, including their economic development department. You can review the ups and downs of that city's job growth over a five-year period by comparing its job growth statistics. Increased job growth, as a whole, increases the demand for real estate, which in turn tends to increase its value. Decreased job growth has the opposite effect. Depending on these factors, you can apply the appropriate strategy. For example, having a company such as Microsoft in a community can have a profound effect on the real estate market. The number of jobs a company creates can increase the demand for housing. Look at the major employers in the area and determine the types of employees they hire: blue-collar, white-collar, high-income employees, and so on. Low-paid employees will likely rent. High-income employees want to buy. The types of people brought into the community affect the types of properties and strategies you use. For example, if more employees will be renting, this would be a great area to have a rental farm, which is a group of rental properties in the same area that you use primarily for cash flow and secondarily for appreciation. If higher-paid employees are moving in, this may be a better fix-and-flip market. You can look for rundown properties that can be rehabbed to be attractive to a market looking for newer but still affordable homes. Conclusion. Now that you have a clear idea of what a cycle is and what cycle your current area is in, along with brief strategies for how to make money in each cycle, it's time to get started. I'll show you how to buy property with no money down, how to buy and sell foreclosures and tax sales, what's an REO and how to make money with it, when is the best time to use a lease option strategy, how to manage rental properties, and more. I'll explain all this, but not just yet. First, I need to give you the foundation to overcome any personal obstacles in your life that may hold you back from achieving your goals. I don't want this to be another missed opportunity for you. Starting today, I want this to be the start of a prosperous, fulfilled, confident, and exciting life for you and your family. It's time to take control of your life. And to do that, you need to set a foundation that will help you take action, overcome fears and obstacles, and start profiting from real estate rather than just read about it. I know it may seem like I'm getting off track, but trust me here as I help you set the foundation for lifelong success and prosperity. If I can do it, so can you.